Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
Alrighty, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show about all things iOS. That would be iPhones, iPods, iPads and Apple TVs. I'm Adam Christensen from the MacCast. I'm filling in for Michael, who is still in the closet this week. We tied him up last week, and we're not letting him go, right, Jeff?
No, we're not. And I just find it to be incredibly funny that he's in there whimpering and... I'm assuming through the duct tape he's asking for water, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, we'll have to let him out before next week, but he should be back then. And that is, of course, Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Adam. It's, you know, 2 weeks in a row. Well, okay, I'm assuming we'll be able to do the show on our own 2 weeks in a row.
I assumed maybe we're taking over.
You know, that's very possible.
Yeah, yeah, we can start that rumor right now. So okay. We got to come up with a good reason. See, Michael just he's not really in you know, tied up in the closet. He got a big he won the lottery and bought his own island and is off doing something. I don't know. We got to come up with something better.
That's way better than what I was coming up with, which was he went to Mexico for Day of the Dead celebrations and woke up in a Mexican prison. And we haven't heard from him yet, but we're sending postcards.
Yeah. Actually, today I think he's probably out voting, which everybody should be doing.
I'm assuming you voted.
Oh, yeah, I did. I do the mail-in thing.
Yeah, see, I have my mail-in ballot, but it never fails. It doesn't go into the mail, and so I have to take it to the polling place and drop it off, which is actually okay, because then I know for certain my ballot really made it.
Right, and if you're hearing this now and going, oh, man, I need to vote, shame on you because you missed it, because today is actually voting day here in the States. The rest of you don't really have to worry, or maybe you do.
Yeah, well, if it is your voting day, go vote.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, I guess we should talk about some iOS, iPhone, iPod, iPad kind of stuff. So this first story kind of hit big, I think, yesterday, and it's the NFC being added to the iPhone 5. It's a rumor that Apple is adding a bunch of near field, does it stand for near field communication? Is that right?
Right.
So NFC technology, which is typically like the most common form I think a lot of people know about is the payment system, that sort of tap to pay kind of systems with your credit card, right?
Right. And RFID falls in to that category as well.
Okay. But reportedly Apple is going to be just blowing this out of the water. It's not just going to be for payment systems. And I think we have another story to talk about the payment side of things, but that the iPhone will sort of become this little device. You walk up to your Mac and it carries all of your data, specifically like your home folder. It's kind of something that I've wanted on my Mac for a long time, some sort of device like Key that I would have my, you know, desktop settings and my browser bookmarks and everything like that. And I would just walk up to my Mac and we'd go, oh, hey, it's Adam. And it would log me in and then show me, you know, my version of the desktop with everything where it's supposed to be. Apple kind of had some server technologies like that. If you were running OS X server, you could have a network home directory. But I guess this would be sort of the same thing, but maybe on your iPhone. Is that what I'm understanding correctly?
That's how I'm interpreting it. And the funny thing is, this is kind of what I've been talking about off and on for quite a while, which is having a device or an Apple device that knows who you are, and when you get near something else, it knows what to do when it's near that. So you get near your computer or someone else's computer that you're going to use, it just becomes yours. So and you walk away, and then it's not yours anymore.
Now, this would require integration on the desktop side, too. So do we think this is maybe one of the unannounced features that might be showing up in Lion, or do you think it might be further off than that?
Well, it could be Lion. Okay, If Apple is taking their near field communication ideas that far, they'd probably need to have a really robust server system in place to handle people's accounts, which would kind of fit in with what's going on
someplace else in the country.
Right. Right.
So North Carolina.
North Carolina. The mystery
that story
data
up
center.
Early. I guess this story is going to lead into all of our other stories for today.
Almost like we planned it.
Yeah. 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 Interesting. So that would make sense that you wouldn't probably necessarily be able to carry your entire home directory. I know I couldn't carry my entire home directory on my iPhone or my iPad, but if that thing did some syncing up to maybe some storage in the cloud, then things get really interesting. And like I said, they had this in, you know, at least in regards to local area networks with OS X server. So if you were running a small office or even a large office, you could have everybody's home directory set up on the server. And so whatever computer they went to, whatever Mac they went to within the organization, once they logged in using their credentials, it would authenticate against the network and then load up your desktop. So all of your local documents, your desktop background, all of your printer settings, your bookmarks, all that stuff would be served off of the central server. And there's no reason why that same technology couldn't work with that stuff living in the cloud. I guess bandwidth would be the biggest issue because, you know, having just now gone through doing online backup with like CrashPlan, you know, that's taken months to set up for me.
Yeah. Well, see, what I would assume you would get is a file that lives on your iOS device. Mm-hmm. And that file is basically a database of what you have on your MobileMe roaming, whatever they want to call it, thing.
Right.
And so when you need a specific file, then it knows from the database, okay, yes, that's a file that's available. Yes, I'm online, so I can get it. And then it goes and fetches the one thing you need.
Ah, you think it'd be like, so sort of combining... Oh, that makes a lot more sense than what I was thinking. So rather than syncing everything up to the cloud, it's using like the back to my Mac kind of style file sharing. Hopefully Apple works out actually getting that to work, but let's assume it works flawlessly. That would make a lot of sense. So you carry on your phone just the pointers and the information that can call back. Your Mac and devices are registered with Apple's central servers, and it can go back and forth and get the documents, settings, and information that it needs, maybe from your home computer that's hooked up, you know, back at your house on Wi-Fi or whatever.
Right. Or if you are storing specific files in your MobileMe iDisk,
right,
then it can jump there instead of having to reference all the way back to your home computer.
Yeah, I guess it really wouldn't matter either way if you had an always-on connection, you know, at your house, which a lot of people do these days.
It's true. And well, in that sense, it would almost be a Dropbox-ish sort of thing.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So that, I mean, this whole concept is really, really kind of cool that your iPhone just becomes this little ID password login thing. You know, people have had this in their cars, and it always puzzles me how secure that stuff is. You know, these people that go, oh, it's great, I don't have a key, I have this thing in my pocket, and I just push the button, you know, and my car starts or the doors unlock.
Well, yeah, well, there's different levels of security. So I would assume for something like this that it would include the type of hardware-based security things that go along with RFID type chips,
right?
And then you would combine that with a password that you have to enter, and so it wouldn't be as simple as I stole your phone, now I can go look at all your files. I would have to steal your phone and know your password.
Right. I'm more interested in the payment system kind of stuff too.
That would be very cool, and it would be about time because what is it? Japan, I think, has a fairly robust RFID type payment system, and I know that throughout Europe, you can get your credit cards with little smart chips in them.
Right.
And so you can just wave your credit card over something, and it processes the transaction for you.
You know, it's funny because we have those, you know, here with our cards. I have all of my cards in my wallet, I think, now have that system. And I go to the grocery store or the convenience store or whatever, and they have that. Every time I try and use it, they go, oh, don't use that. It doesn't work.
That's awesome.
Like, it's great. I think it's great for micropayments, and that's what they use it, you know, like vending machines in Japan. It's like perfect. I want a candy bar. I don't have, you know, a buck and a quarter in my pocket or whatever the vending machine wants. You just tap your card, or in this case, you just hold your iPhone up and go, yep, pay for that, and out comes your snack.
You know, I found that when I was in Italy last year, mm-hmm. I had a really hard time using my credit card because most of the credit card reading machines that I was encountering assumed that you had a smart card. And as it turns out, none of the credit cards that I have, maybe Colorado's really backwards that way, but none of the credit cards I have smart card chips in them. So I couldn't process transactions with my own credit cards a lot of the time.
Oh, wow. Now, does this start to get creepy? Because this fascinates me, and at the same time, makes me leery or scares me. And it's because I'm thinking about how cool would it be if your iPhone could be used as a payment system in the Apple Store. So, you know, the geniuses run around, or the Apple guys run around with their little handheld terminal. Now, what mm-hmm. if that thing just like tied into your Apple ID, and they walked up and said, "Oh, hey, Jeff, good to see you. See, you want to get that new version of iLife? Can you know? Would you like to pay for that?" Yes. Blink.
Okay. Take it a step farther, and put an RFID chip in every package in the store. So
right.
So you're walking along, and you have your arms loaded up with stuff, and so you walk up to one of the employees and say, "I'm ready to check out," and they pull out their little iPad or iPod Touch thing and go, "Okay, I see you have a Belkin HDMI cable. You have iFrog's case for your iPhone, and oh look, you have an iOmega Go drive. So all right, so that's going to be however much, $500 or whatever." And you go, "Okay, great." And then your iPhone blings in your pocket, and there's a little message on the screen that says, "Apple Store Flatiron Crossing wants to charge you $500 for this, this, and this. Do you approve the transaction?" "Yes." And you're done.
I guess it could get even creepier. They could have a little kind of bank double door type system, and you walk through a little channel to get out of the store, and it if you have, you know, items in your pocket, it locks the outer door, and there's a little screen there, and it says, "Would you like to here's an inventory of the items we know that you have on you. Would you like to pay with those with your iPhone?" "Yes." And then
you don't go to jail.
And it opens the outer door. Yeah. They don't even need people.
I could see a system like that. However, my assumption is that instead of putting doors that block you from leaving, because Apple is more into the personal touch in their stores, there would be a person there just standing at the door. Mm-hmm. And so as you walk up, they go, "Oh, okay, I see you have this, this, and this." And they go, "Oh, yeah, so I see everything except the headphones." And you go, "Oh, crap, I wasn't going to buy those. They're in my pocket." And you take them out. And because, of course, you legitimately forgot you had picked them up.
Right.
Or if you're a parent and you have a little kid, and they don't get what's, you know, how retail works, and they're going, "Oh, pretty," and they're throwing stuff in your iPad case or in their mom's purse. And the mom hits the end of the store and finds out that she has like $250 worth of accessories in her purse and had no idea.
Right. But see, you can keep going with this. And then this is where the conspiracy theorists, you know, come into play, because let's just say the item has a little chip in it, and it can now, you know, talk to your iDevice and tell it, "You know what? I haven't been paid for." and then your iDevice turns on the locate my iPhone feature and then reports to the authorities because you've left the store. You know, say you got out of the store with it.
Oh, I love it.
Right? So you made it out of the store with those headphones. The headphones are like, I've been taken out of the store and haven't been paid for. Your iPhone and goes, oh, really? Really? Let me call Apple and let them know.
That's awesome.
And I'll send your GPS coordinates to the mothership so they can come get you.
Well, you know, with that that Apple Store application update that came out, was it about mm-hmm. a week ago? Has an option in there where you can request help while you're in a store.
Right, and they do that via the just Wi-Fi, right? That's not using this near-field communications, which is kind of a different technology. I guess it'd be another chip that they have to put in the iPhone, which may be the reason why this doesn't happen.
Well, the power consumption on a chip like that is negligible.
Right.
So I'm assuming it's more of a space issue.
Yeah.
And honestly, I thought we were going to see that in iPhone 4. I was really surprised when we didn't have RFID technology built in.
Yeah, there was a rumor too that that one of the, like Visa or somebody, was going to do a case, you know, like a battery style case, like a Mophie or something like that, that would have the technology in it.
And that could still happen.
Yeah. Very interesting. All right. I think we've kind of killed that story. iOS 4.2 goes gold master, which means we're supposed to get it in November. I figured it'd be the end of the November, but with these, you know, with it going final version, I guess, or release candidate, then we should be seeing it, I would imagine, pretty soon, right?
That's my assumption, because when Apple releases a gold master candidate to developers, that's pretty much the last step before they roll it out to everyone else.
Yeah. Now the weird thing about it is it you know, from the reports that we're getting, it does seem pretty finished, but there's also some things that kind of some major things that seem to still be missing. And the one I'm more, you know, most excited about, and I keep hearing every time they say a new release has come out, is AirPlay. And all the reports that I'm reading are saying that it is still audio only to the new Apple TV. What's up with that? I mean, how can it be release candidate or gold master if there's like a major feature still not functioning?
Well, it could be a priority issue, because they may have decided that because they need to do something about the daylight saving time switch bug.
Right.
Excuse me, that they want to get 4.2 out before the weekend, and then they'll add the video stuff in later.
I hope that's not the case, though. That was the feature I was looking most forward to. It's the only reason, actually, I really bought a new Apple TV. I mean, that and the price. It was cheap enough that I was willing to buy it just for the AirPlay feature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been waiting on that to play around with that. So I'd be very disappointed if 4.2 releases and it doesn't have AirPlay with video support in it.
Yeah, that would be kind of disappointing. And you know, and it may be that there's just a couple software switches they need to flip and they haven't.
Right. That's what I'm wondering, is if they just, maybe they've tested it internally. It scares me a little bit that they wouldn't have put it out to developers for testing, though, and release that. I think your scenario is more likely the case, that they couldn't get the video working and they've already announced the November time frame, or for whatever reason they want to get the daylight savings bug thing out there, and that they're going to release it, and then there'll be a 4.2.1 or something like that that brings the full AirPlay functionality.
Right. And you know, and if it is a scheduling issue because they want to make sure they fix the daylight saving bug, how crappy is that for Australia and New Zealand and Tasmania and pretty much all of Europe?
Yeah.
Because they've had to deal with the daylight savings bug.
Can you, for people who hadn't, I think we talked about it last time, but just in case somebody is unaware of what that bug is, can you tell?
Sure. Okay. So the deal is, if you have set recurring alarms on your iOS device, when it's with iOS 4.0 and later, I believe, mm-hmm. when daylight saving hits for this fall transition, your recurring alarms will not work correctly. They'll either go off an hour early or an hour late.
I think it's an hour earlier, unfortunately. So like a bunch of people.
Yeah, well, some people have been complaining that it went off an hour late. And so they missed. Now, to be fair, it could be that they were just lazy and used it as an excuse. But there's enough reports that it sounds like some people are having their alarms go off an hour late.
I'd rather have it be an hour late than an hour early when it's waking me up at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. or whatever it might be.
Yeah, no kidding. So the temporary fix is you either change the alarm time so that it's offset enough to put it back at what you expect to have, even though the time shows wrong.
Right.
Or you delete the recurring alarm and recreate it. And then it's fine.
Yeah, I was really surprised that Apple didn't rush out a patch for that. This is one of those things where it seems like they don't have the ability to be that agile with iOS releases, and they save it for, you know, a major update. I guess if it's only affecting reoccurring alarms, maybe if they just figure it's not that big a deal. But I mean, if you're the person being impacted by it, it is a big deal to you.
Yeah, you could miss an important appointment. You could lose your job. Yeah, who knows? But it's one of those things that it seemed like a big enough bug that it should have been addressed immediately.
Right.
And since they had the window between when the, I'll call it the Australia region,
right,
experienced the problem, and they knew that they had a few weeks, couple weeks, whatever, until they would have to deal with it again in Europe and the United Kingdom. Okay, that's a really big area, right, which means that's a lot of people that are being impacted by this. I figured that they would go ahead and fix it so that they wouldn't have to deal with this across Europe and the United Kingdom. And so now I'm thinking, okay, well, maybe it is a 4.2 thing and that they're rolling it out ahead of the daylight saving switch in the United States.
Great. Just more reasons for everybody to be angry at the U.S.
Yeah. Yeah. So if that is the case, hey, thanks, Apple.
Yeah. For making us look like big jerks again.
Yeah. I mean,
we do it to ourselves, but I mean,
yeah, we don't need help. We can handle looking like jerks all on our own.
Internationally. I know I'm guilty of it. I'm not as, you know, savvy internationally as I should be.
Yeah, well, there's so many different cultures. It's difficult to know how to avoid all the social fouls everywhere you go.
Yeah, but Americans are generally, we are arrogant to a certain degree. I'll be the first to admit it. So
we are. Yeah, well, there you go.
There you go. Well, we're not going to have confirmation whether this is fixed or not, right? Until the switch actually happens, right?
Right. And it could be that Apple doesn't give us iOS 4.2 till next week, which would be after the daylight saving switch.
Right. But you haven't heard if anybody who has the beta, like, have any of the rumor sites said if it's fixed or not. I haven't seen anything to say that it was.
I haven't seen anything either.
I don't even know how you would test it. I guess you could roll your clock forward and see. I don't know. But regardless, a big fix that is in there is the screen lock dialer hack that we talked about, I think, on the last episode, which was the bigger bug. You know, there were two kind of
The thing where you
issues.
Go.
Last week, and I had said that, you know, I thought that the iPhone emergency dialer hack was a bigger issue, because what was happening is there was a way to, even though you had your screen lock on, to actually get into the contacts and the dialer information, which means someone could potentially, even with your phone locked, get access to your voicemails, all of your contacts. They could SMS or call people all without having full access to the phone. And that has been fixed in 4.2. That's been confirmed.
And that's a good thing to fix.
Yeah. So
I'm glad that's fixed. If I had to choose between daylight savings bug getting fixed and someone being able to do a couple keystrokes and get at all of my contacts, I'll take the contact fix.
Yeah, absolutely. And they did some nice new things, apparently, to I don't know what to call that screen. It's the iPod control screen, I guess. Is that right? Where you double tap, you bring up the multitasking thing, and then you slide to the left. And now they have all kinds of, they have the playback controls for the iPod. And they also had the rotation lock, because the physical switch on the iPad is now becoming a mute switch. So you're going to have to, just like on the iPhone 4, or just like, yeah, I guess iPhone and iPod Touch in iOS 4, get access to the rotation lock from software. But they added universal brightness control.
Yes.
Which is nice. And then also a AirPlay button.
Right. So that's pretty cool. Now, on the hardware mute switch, I've been seeing information showing up on Twitter today, mm-hmm. where people are saying, you know, I thought this was supposed to be a mute switch. Why isn't it muting? And other people are coming back and saying, actually, it's not a mute switch in the sense that it would be a mute switch. It's a mute switch in the sense that it stops just alert sounds. So,
what?
Yeah, so if that's really the case, not only have they taken away a very useful function for the Switch, they've replaced it with something that's crap.
I had not read that. That would be not good.
Now, not having 4.2 available to me yet, I haven't been able to test that, but it's clear based on what I'm seeing on Twitter that the mute switch is not performing in a way that people are expecting.
Yeah. Well, I'm in the developer program. I have 4.2, but I'm not going to break NDA.
Okay, that's fair enough.
I don't need another excuse for Apple to be upset with me.
Yeah, I feel your pain.
So we'll keep on top of it, and we'll check the news feeds. If we don't have 4.2, the final version by next week, I'm sure it'll come out, confirmed or not confirmed in the blogs. But 4.2, I think, was just released yesterday.
Yes,
late yesterday. Yeah. It was like 5 p.m. yesterday. So we'll spend some more time with it and try and get somebody who will break NDA to say whether that is the case or not.
Right, and someone will. And to that person,
thank you.
We'll thank you in advance.
But I think it's going to be a nice update. I'm looking forward to it. It does bring, the biggest thing is it brings iOS 4 to the iPads, which I think is long overdue. So,
yeah, I'm really looking forward to having multitasking on my iPad. And actually, that's the biggest thing I'm looking forward to, because I'm really, I finally got used to double tapping my home button to be able to jump between a couple applications.
Yeah, that and the email features. I mean, threading and universal inbox and all that stuff, which is just awesome on my iPhone 4. But I prefer reading email on my iPad because it's just easier to manage and deal with the larger screen. So those features, that between that and AirPlay and multitasking, although, multitasking, that's still one of those features that I don't really rely on a whole lot. I've had this conversation with a couple people who said, I thought multitasking was going to be a really big deal in iPhone 4. And the reality is that 90% of my apps, I don't use multitasking. I use them in the same way that I used them prior to 4.0. And I know for sure I'm that way.
I'm that way too, actually. What the feature that I like out of multitasking is quick application switching.
Yeah, I forget to use it though. See, this was part of that conversation that I had, is I think it's a training issue. It's like I had my iPhone without multitasking for so long. Like, I think if I was getting an iPhone now and it was my first iPhone, I would be all over multitasking and I would be using it. But I literally forget to use it, the fast user switching. And every time I use it, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. It's not ingrained in my muscle memory. So,
well, for me, it's one of those things that it's been in like the last 2 or 3 weeks where I've really started using fast app switching. And really, it's taken that long for me to get to the point where I will actually use the feature, not because I thought it would be bad, but you're right. There's the whole muscle memory thing, and you have to retrain yourself.
Yeah. The other area it's been really good is just apps remembering, you know, where you were at within the app, so that, and this comes up for me because I use 1Password, and so all my apps that I have to log in with, I'll forget to go to 1Password first to look up the password. So to be able to fast switch over to 1Password, get the password, and then fast switch back to the app and still have the screen up that has the login boxes in it is really nice. You know, without having the whole app closed down and having to go back to that screen. So
yeah, that's a very nice feature. And yeah, that's actually probably one of the things that got me to using fast app switching a lot on my iPhone.
Yeah. Yeah. And for certain apps, the background processing, you know, Pandora, and I use it with my GPS app and stuff like that. So it's going to be nice to have some of those features finally showing up on the iPad. And I think it's going to be any day now. I can't imagine that it won't be more than, if we don't see it within a week, I imagine less than 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, Apple is encouraging developers to submit updates if they need to make changes to their apps for 4.2 compatibility. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if Apple's saying, look, get your stuff in now, that tells me the release is imminent.
Right. Right. Apple is selling a lot of iPads, or at least they did in Q3, according to some recent studies. Strategy Analytics came out and said that in the third quarter of this year, 95.5% market share for the iPad in the tablet market.
Holy crap.
Well, I saw this stat and it makes great, you know, this is one of those things that makes great headline, but really, what other thing is there for anybody to buy?
Okay, so how are they defining a tablet? Is it the slate type devices, yes, like the iPad,
yes,
and that's it?
I think so. That was okay. My take on it. So it was sort of like, I don't even think you could buy, I mean, maybe at the very end of the quarter, could you get the Samsung tablet? I mean, there aren't other options on the when you have the only, ostensibly the only app, the only tablet on the market for the majority of the quarter, of course you're going to have the majority of the market share.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable conclusion. Yeah. Now, if they were throwing in like tablet PCs to that mix as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Then that would change what these numbers mean. Even still, I mean, Apple really is dominating that thin focused use tablet market.
Right. Let's see. The one report here says it included Windows, MeeGo, WebOS, and BlackBerry devices and other platforms, along with Android-based tablets, of course, but it's not really defining the actual, you know, form factor. So did it? It says Windows, so I would assume that Windows would include Windows tablet systems.
Well, maybe or maybe not. I mean, HP released their Slate thing, or did it actually ship?
See, I think this is the problem.
I can't remember.
This is why Apple has 95% market share, because even those of us who should be in the know, we don't even know if anybody else is shipping a tablet.
Yeah, well, the Slate thing that HP was shipping, or supposed to ship, or might be just about to ship, the specs on it turned out to be, much to my surprise, a complete piece of crap.
And it's like, that's the $800 one, right?
Yeah, and it's like, just a ridiculous feature set. Like, you're sitting there looking at it going, really? I think 5-year-olds could have designed a better tablet and it would have had a place to hold their crayons. The HP thing, it requires a stylus and has no place to store it.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Oh, well, because they want to make it thin.
Yeah, well, and...
But they could at least include some sort of clip, right? Or case, yeah. or something.
Yeah, so they've made it sort of thin, but essentially unusable, because if you don't have any place to actually store the stylus, how long will it be before that's lost? And really, how could that get through their entire development phase without anyone saying, look, we have to make sure there's a place to hold the stylus.
Very easily. I mean, this is what happens, and this is part of the reason why I'm an Apple fan and a Mac user, is the attention to, typical attention to the small details, you know, antenna gate issues aside, right? I guess Apple, how could Apple, you know, get through a whole device, and we can go, I don't want to go back into that argument because we've had that already, but I mean, really, that there was a design blunder there. I think.
Yeah.
You know, when you have to ship cases and convince people that it's not an issue when it does seem like an issue, then, you know, that was a case of design taking some amount of prominence over function, or at least saying we're not as worried about that as we are about the design. And maybe sure. that was HP's take on this too. Or maybe they just said, you know what, we're going to order a crud load of replacement styluses and we'll make a little extra money on the back end.
That could be.
So bonus. Right? I don't know. But you point well taken. I was more surprised at the price point.
Yeah, the price point was very surprising. I found the whole thing to be a bit of a surprise. So it's a problem for me because I was looking to HP to be the true competitor to the iPad. Mm-hmm. And if they continue down the same path with what they've just shown, there's no way they can do that. If they can go back to the drawing board and come up with something much better that runs Android, or excuse me, WebOS, mm-hmm. then maybe they can pick up and catch up to the iPad.
Right.
But yeah. Not with what they have right now.
Yeah, this design, it really seems like it was more just a next generation or maybe final generation version of a Windows tablet computer, which is, you know, the Windows tablet computers have been around for a long, long time. HP, I think, has had a couple of those over the years. So this was more of an iPad-ish Windows tablet. I mean, it runs the full version of Windows, so it really is more in that notebook kind of tablet hybrid space for me.
Yeah. Then
a tablet in the sense that Apple is doing it or Android is doing it, right?
Right. Okay, so now I'm wondering, because this is based on the design, I believe, that Steve Ballmer held up on stage during his CES keynote last, when was CES? January.
Right.
So almost a year ago.
The slate. Is it really though? Slate. Or is it more, because I thought that was like a 7-inch, but maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe my memory escapes me.
I can't remember. I remember watching him holding this thing up on stage and thinking, really, if I was HP or any of the other partners that had their tablet prototypes up there, I would find your house and I would burn a bag of dog poop on your porch, because the way Ballmer presented those was so bad.
Yeah. Well, that
I mean, yeah. Okay. Now he's not a presenter.
Here's your first mistake, that you were going to let Ballmer demo your product.
Right. Right. And it was basically he held it up, went, hey, look at this, ooh, and boom, off it went, and that was it. And I'm like, what the hell just happened here? And I mean, the people on either side of me, the person on my left does a lot of writing in the Mac world. Mm-hmm. The person on my right does a lot of writing in the Windows world, and they both are prominent writers. And the three of us were looking at each other going, really? that's what they just did?
I love your Ballmer impression. That was great.
I think Brian Chaffin's Ballmer impression is much better than mine.
Yeah, still good. So that Q3, Apple, huge market share. The same report said tablet demand is up about 26%. And in a different survey, by ChangeWave, they actually looked at trends for the next quarter and asked, how many people were planning on actually making purchases in the next 90 days of netbooks and tablets and things like that. And a couple interesting things out of that: 14% said that of the people who were planning on buying a portable in the next 90 days, only 14% said they were going to get a netbook. Sorry, I think I said that wrong. So the point is, for netbooks, demand is definitely
down on
the downslide, you know, at least according to the ChangeWave numbers. And then they also said in the same study, 26% of the people in the survey were planning on getting a tablet device. And of that 26%, 80% said it was going to be an iPad.
That's very telling.
Right. So that, you know, interesting prediction. We'll see if that holds out to be true. You know, if come the end of the quarter, we're seeing numbers that Apple still has 80% market share in the tablet space. I think they probably actually could, and it might even be higher, because if you look at the competition, as we were kind of talking about, I just don't see anybody who's going to have a device that really has caught up to where the iPad is, even with bullet point features like, oh, it's got dual cameras. You know, I think things like the App Store in the marketplace and just the ease of use stuff, I think consumers are going to take to much more readily than, you know, some giant list of features or 0.2 extra gigahertz on a processor.
Well, the people that are going to key in on those types of features, did I say gonna?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I am sorry. I can't believe I just did that. Okay, so the people that are going to key in on those bullet point features are the kind of people that are focused on just what the technology is.
Right.
By and large, as opposed to people that are focused more on what the end user experience is.
Right.
So, you know, so for those people, fine. They can have their bullet point list. Everyone else knows what they're expecting from the end user experience. And so there's a market for both, but I have a feeling end user experience market will be a lot bigger.
Yeah, the funny thing about that segment of the market you're talking about, the ones that are going to go for the bullet point, that are in it for the cool technology, and a lot of these new netbooks with the, you know, on the Android side they have some great cool technology in them, but so did a lot of the netbooks, and I knew a lot of geeks who you know went, oh, I'm getting the triple E PC thing or whatever.
Oh, right,
and you know, it was almost like it was a cool little experiment for them, but if I go back to a lot of them today and say, are you still using that as your primary device? No, they're back on their notebook. Because ultimately, I think for that group of people, no matter how much technology is in there, it still ultimately ends up sort of being kind of underpowered and not really looking for. And even an iPad, I mean, none of the tablets are going to have that appeal for that market segment, which is why I think tablets is a whole new, it's a different market. It's definitely not, and I said this before the iPad came out, I don't think the iPad is a device for the geek market. It really isn't. As much cool factor as it has, and it has a lot of that, I think long term, you know, it's just, there's not enough horsepower to do all the things that group of people wants to do ultimately.
Right. And the iPad.
I guess I should caveat that with yet.
Yet. And for those really hardcore tech people, I think with some of the apps that are coming out, they're finding some things that they see as very appealing.
Right.
Like the ability to use VNC technology and things like that. But you're right. For the most part, that's not a device for them yet. But that could change with time.
Well, you gave me a lead in. It was going to be my trailing story, but we might as well talk about that. This guy that hacked his iPhone to be a server console device, who said it was...
That's just cool.
Yeah. So he got a 30-pin to parallel, if I'm getting this right, parallel connector. I don't even know how he built that. His name's Chris Pollock. And yeah, it's a 30-pin to serial adapter.
Okay,
and he can walk up and plug that into his server rack and then manage his servers from his iPhone.
That's really cool.
So it does have that kind of geek chic geek factor in that regard. And I actually have been using VNC and SSH more on my iPad, and I have to say it's brilliant. It works awesome.
Yes. Yeah. The people that I know locally where I can actually watch them doing those sorts of things, it is so cool. And I watched
He built his own adapter, by the way.
I'm not surprised.
At the computer world article now. Yeah, he built his own. I mean, he's got a bench tester out, and he's, you know, testing pins and making the connections. So I was trying to see what software he was actually using to, you know, what kind of console software he was using. But I'm assuming there's like VT100, you know, emulators or whatever you had to do a jailbreak to actually get this to work. But
oh, right. Yeah, that's no surprise there. But still, I mean, the fact that this guy could sit down and figure out, okay, here's the pinout I need, build a custom cable, and get the software he needs through a jailbreak, and then start managing his servers with that setup. I mean, holy crap, that shows just how much potential we have in this whole iOS and tablet market.
Yeah, very, very cool. So yeah, you can look that up. I guess we could throw a link probably in the show notes if I can figure out how to do it. But if not, hacked his iPhone to be a server console.
That's really cool.
Target's going to be selling the iPhone. Sounds like in time for the holidays, November 7th. Is that right?
November 7th. Yeah. Now, okay. So just to be clear, they will be selling it in their stores that have the Target Mobile Center, which is like 850-ish, 860, something like that. So about 850 stores across the United States.
Huh.
So, yeah.
So is there going to be any place where you can't buy an iPhone this holiday season?
Well,
you know, they're going to be giving them away in Happy Meals pretty soon, I think.
Yeah. So the answer is yes, because you won't be able to buy them at Olive Garden.
And, darn.
Excuse me. And about half of the Target stores won't have them until mid-2011 because they haven't rolled out the Target Mobile Center to all of their stores. They have like 1,700 stores in the United States.
Oh, and Costco, of course.
Right. But to be fair, if you went to buy one in Costco, you'd have to buy a whole pallet full.
Yeah, I guess Costco and Apple are not on good terms anymore. I think this week they stopped selling iTunes gift cards and they had stopped selling iPods.
Well, Costco, I remember the last time I saw an iPod in Costco. It was very interesting because it wasn't regular packaging. It was like this big card that was about the size of a 17-inch MacBook Pro. And it was like this blister pack card that had the iPhone the iPod and some other things in. So it was a special packaging thing just for Costco.
Right. Right. Oh, they always had good deals because you could get like a $25 iTunes card for like $20 or something like that. I mean, it was like...
Right. And when you'd buy an iPod, it included gift cards and... Yeah.
Yeah, so they had some nice things. What I had read, and I don't know if this is true, this is all rumor and speculation, but that Apple's not letting them have the iPad or the iPhone yet, and which is why they're saying, well, fine, if you're not going to let us have that, we're not going to sell your iTunes or your iPods anymore.
To which Apple probably said, whatevs.
So I don't know if that's true or not, but that's interesting. But I mean, so iPhones in Radio Shack, Walmart, Best Buy, Target, your Apple Store, online,
Verizon. If you want an
Verizon
iPad
on the iPad, AT&T stores. So I mean, plenty of places to pick up an iPhone now. And who would have thought that? You know.
Well, back in April, no one.
Yeah. Very, very interesting. So I guess they're geared up for the holidays. It sounds like, too, I think I read today that iPhone shipments are now shipping within 24 hours. So maybe they've got some of their supply chain problems fixed up. I think they had said in the last quarterly results call that they felt that right before the holidays, the supply chain issues should be worked out. So it
sounds
like
we're
getting
there. Were right.
Yeah.
And iPads have been at next day shipping for a little while now.
Cool.
The only delay that you're seeing on the Apple Store online if you order an iPad is if you choose engraving, because that could take up to 3 days. But that's not a supply issue. That's a production issue for the engraving.
Huh. Okay. God, we got a lot of stories still to cover, and we're almost at an hour. We'll do a rapid fire.
Okay.
Flash on iOS.
Not really, but kind of.
Not really, kind of. What's the deal?
Okay, so the deal is the Skyfire app, which will be available on Thursday, will intercept the Flash content that you want to watch, meaning Flash videos. That's all this works with. Routes it back to the Skyfire servers, converts it to HTML5, and then lets you watch it that way.
There's been websites that do this same thing, right?
Right, but this makes it easy for the average user to be able to watch Flash content.
But it's just because it's integrated in their own browser, right? So they did a WebKit based browser app, right, that kind of handles this automatically.
Right, and Apple approved it.
Huh. Well, because I wouldn't see why not. I mean, it's still delivering HTML5 standard video. It's not, they're not embedding a Flash player in the browser. You know, it's not like that. So,
well, the place I could see Apple saying no, we're not going to approve this, would be based on the fact that Skyfire has to take someone else's content, re-encode it, push it back out. So
that could be a problem for them outside of Apple, and maybe Apple's just saying, look, we're not going to be the police force here, the content police, although they have been in the past, you know, the sort of copyright police.
Right. So what they may do is let it go out. People can pay their $2.99 and buy it. And then when some company says, hey, look, they're taking our content and repurposing it, and that's a violation of our licensing, then Apple pulls out. But it could also be that they have something in the app where they can block certain sites because Hulu won't be supported.
Right.
And that's an intentional blocking thing on Hulu's part.
Which pretty much means the app's not going to sell, because that's 99% of the people I talk to, that's the only bit of Flash that they miss on iOS devices. Like, I just wish it could do Hulu. And there is a Hulu app, but you have to do the paid Hulu thing.
Right, so that's $10 a month.
Yeah. Yeah, go fig. All right, something I didn't even realize was missing from my Apple II yet, iTunes extras and LPs. But I guess somebody emailed Steve Jobs, and Jobs said they'll come back.
So, okay, so wait, Apple TV 2 does not have iTunes extras and iTunes LPs right now?
Apparently, I didn't realize it, but I don't, because, I'm still in that camp on the iTunes extra thing. If I want extras, I'm going to buy the DVD. So I buy DVDs because I'd rather just have the physical media at this point. I guess I don't want to manage. This is the problem. If Apple would come out with this central server and I could buy my movie content with the iTunes extra stuff on it, and Apple would archive it, store it, and back it up for me, and I could just re-download it or stream it when I want to watch it, I don't care which way they want to go, then I would probably, for $15 start buying more movies through iTunes. But until they're going to do that, I don't want to have to deal with burning a backup, what happens if I lose it, having to buy it again. At least with the physical media, I know it's over there on the shelf, and I can go grab it and play it whenever I want.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, and I use Handbrake. If I've bought a DVD that I really want to watch on the go, and it didn't include a digital copy, then I just use Handbrake,
right,
and throw it on my iPad.
Yep,
and call it good.
Yeah, so. And I actually prefer the digital content stuff if I can get it now.
Yeah, so do I.
So if any of the studios are listening, please just include that, and then we won't have to rip it, because it saves me time.
it saves a lot of time.
We're going to do anyway, so you might as well just do it. And I actually do have some iTunes LPs, which are actually really pretty nice. I just hadn't tried playing them on the Apple TV yet, because for me, the Apple TV is a video device. I don't do a lot of music on it, but I know other people do. So, and with iTunes LP, you do get the audio tracks. So, typically, I'm not, if I am doing audio through my Apple TV, it's just to get it into the stereo system so I have better sound quality. And I'm not really, I don't have the TV on. I'm not looking at the on-screen type of content. But it was really surprising to hear that that's not there, although when I really thought about it, because the Apple TV is a streaming only device, it does kind of make sense, because they'd have to change some things on the iTunes side to actually deliver that content as streams instead of, you know, in the current version, you copy the stuff over to your Apple TV. I don't think that stuff, I'll have to try streaming it, seeing if I can do an iTunes Extra or LP to my first gen Apple TV just with streaming. I bet you that doesn't work. I bet you I actually have to sync that content over.
I'm looking forward to hearing how that experiment turns out, because I honestly don't know.
Yeah. Just never really played with it. But there's that. And that data center thing. Some analysts came out, I thought this was interesting, saying that the data center is going to just be it's a big broadcast studio, a next generation broadcasting studio that Apple is building. And he said, but not for television, like you're thinking, it's for apps. I don't even know what that means.
Neither do I. Okay, so right now, if you buy an app for your iOS device,
right,
and then you delete it and decide, oh, I'm going to download it again. When you go to download it, your iTunes or the iOS device will say, you've already purchased this. Do you want to re-download it? And you say yes, and it re-downloads. So we already have a system in place where you can re-download apps that you've already bought without having to pay again. What does the broadcast thing do?
Right. And I'm wondering if it doesn't tie in more to what we were talking about at the top of the show with the near-field communication stuff and the desktop and tying in with certain files and data living up in the cloud and then being streamed out, or the ability to reach back to other computers that you have registered with the service and get data and information. And maybe even if you take that a step further and you go, okay, well, maybe we're back to this idea that your apps can live in the cloud as well and stream out to your devices and you can use them that way. There's no technical reason.
That's crap.
There's no technical reason why that couldn't happen.
No, you're absolutely right. But the notion of taking the apps as they are and converting them into some sort of web app thing, I just don't see that happening, because at that point you're assuming, or you have to assume, that you have ubiquitous internet access. And we don't. I mean, you right. can drive down the street and hit Open Networks and Starbucks all the time. But there's a lot of places where you don't have that access. And as a perfect example, when was the last time you flew where you didn't have internet access?
Right. Right.
Yeah.
The one area where I do hope that Apple is investing some money in and it is part of that data center is just in some sort of centralized file repository, a la Dropbox, that developers can have an API for and can be easily integrated into their iOS apps.
That would be cool.
Yeah. And so I have the ability to reach in before I get on the plane and say, oh, I want to work on these five documents while I'm there, you know, grab them, download them to my iPhone and have them available. But I don't want them living on my iPhone all the time. Same thing for music and videos and things like that. I mean, video would be ideal for this, or even the ability to, in some cases, stream or download video from a central repository, depending on what I'm doing. So same kind of scenario. I'm sitting in the terminal. I just want to watch a TV show that I purchased. Well, I can just stream that off the Wi-Fi while I'm waiting in the terminal. But hey, I know I'm going to be getting on the plane in an hour. I have an hour layover. Hey, start downloading the TV show. I want to watch it on the plane.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. I hopefully, you know, with licensing and stuff like that, Apple can get it sorted out. But
you know, I think the big problem with getting what you're looking for and what you're asking for is totally reasonable.
Right.
The problem is that we have record labels and movie studios that are so entrenched in their old style of doing things, their old world business model, and we have moved on, and they don't like that. So they're resisting what makes sense and what the new revenue models are. And until you can get those camps to wake up or die out and new companies come in their place that do get it, I just don't see it happening as right. much as Apple would like it.
Yeah, let me give you a scenario though. So even though they're not letting that happen, guess what? it's here anyway. So this is the right. coolest thing. So the other night I had a video that I knew I had just created with iMovie 11, a little video, and I was out at a Halloween party and I wanted to show some people. And I went, oh, crud, I know I ripped the video. I put it in my iTunes, but I forgot to check the box to say, you know, sync it over to my iPhone. So I don't have it on my iPhone. And I thought, oh, you know what, though? You know what I do have? I have iTeleport and VNC access. I have Air Video, but the Air Video server software wasn't on my Mac. And I have Air Video set up to share the content that's in my iTunes library. So I went, you know what? Boom, popped open iTeleport, VNC'd back to my Mac on my desktop, launched the Air Video server,
mm-hmm.
pulled up the Air Video app on my iPhone, and streamed over 3G because Air Video has the great feature of re-encoding the video down, you know, on the fly in real time down to an appropriate bit rate for 3G streaming, and just streamed it to my iPhone.
Yeah, how about that?
And it worked beautifully. So I just rolled my own version of what I want Apple to give me. And I, you know, we've talked about this too. You've done the same thing, and I do this all the time too, where I remote in and throw stuff up to my Dropbox files that I forgot to load up. But I just like that to be more automated. You know, if that could just be something that happened automatically through my iDisk and my Mobile Me account, and something that developers could easily integrate, you know, with a couple API calls that Apple provided, that just would make this whole thing a whole lot simpler and easier and better. But we can still do it,
yeah.
You know, regardless.
Yeah, so record labels and movie studios, take heed. We're already doing what you don't want us to, which is accessing our content in a reasonable fashion from wherever we are.
Yeah, the stuff that we paid for, my case created, but same thing that, you know, we paid for.
Yeah, I have no problem with taking content that I've paid for and making it accessible to me wherever I go.
perfectly reasonable to me. All right, let's do some picks.
Oh, pick time.
Yeah, are you ready? I can do my pick because I'm ready if you need a moment to get ready.
Yeah, go ahead and do yours because
okay,
I'm not sure which one I'm doing.
I didn't do this one. I don't think I did. I think I had it in my back pocket one time and I went with a different pick. Did I pick, and of course now I can't find it, I just had it here, Remote Palette.
Oh.
Do you know about Remote Palette?
No.
So this is a really cool drawing app, and the reason it's really cool is that it is a universal app. You can get it for the iPhone and the iPad, and you run it on your iPad, and it can connect over Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. I think it's Bluetooth. And it allows you to have a painting surface on the iPad. And then you have your colors and your palettes and your tools on your iPhone.
Huh, that's really cool.
Yeah. So it's really interesting because you take your finger and you reach down into your little your paint wells and you tap the color on the iPhone that you want to paint on the canvas on the iPad, and then you go over to the iPad and you start painting. It's not the most robust painting app out there, but it does have neat things. Like, it has little coloring pages that are built into it, so you can do coloring so kids will get a kick out of it, and it has different implements, so you have brushes and pens and different kinds of styluses, and you swipe through on the iPhone screen to get to the different colors and screens like that. The one thing I wish it had that it doesn't right now, and hopefully they'll add it, is the ability to mix colors.
Oh, you
know,
sure.
Like a true painter's palette. So if I could pick, you know, this color and then that color and sort of mix them together, blend them and come up with a new color and then apply that to the canvas on the iPad. I believe, you know what? I don't know if I've tried using it as a standalone because I just think it's so cool as you know, the two companion apps, and I have both devices. This will also work with an iPod Touch as well. I have an iPhone, but we'll work with an iPod Touch as well.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah. So I thought that was really nifty, and it's just neat to see. I think we're going to see a lot more of this kind of integration. And it, you know, it gives you a nice, clean, full-size surface on the iPad that's unencumbered by any, you know, palettes or anything like that.
The whole screen for your artwork.
Exactly.
That's very cool.
Exactly. And even things like the coloring pages, those come up on the iPhone. You know, so you can pick a coloring page. So hopefully they'll be adding more, you know, more coloring pages for kids and the ability to mix colors. But I think this is the first version of the app. So as a first version, I think it's got a lot of great potential. And I guess I was wrong with the implements. It just has different brush sizes. So it goes from thin to really wide brushes, but hopefully they'll be adding more things like pens and crayons and different kinds of, drawing implements. But I think it was $1.99.
I'm looking at it right now. It's 99 cents.
Oh, 99 cents. And like I said, it's universal, so you get both versions. But the one thing I didn't know is I don't know what happens if you just use I don't know if you can use the app by itself.
I bet you would be able to, because to assume that everyone has an iPhone or iPod Touch and an iPad. Yeah,
and I just tried it. You actually can.
Okay.
So you have to, it just gives you a button to toggle back and forth between the palette and the drawing tools. But I like it as the little companion thing. Because I just have my little iPhone sitting there, you know, off to the side. It's my little palette, and I tap the color. It's a weird thing, because it's almost like, oh, I'm putting red paint on my finger now, and I'm painting in red, and, you know, it's like virtual paint.
That's really cool.
Definitely makes a good tech demo.
Yeah.
So that's my pick.
Very cool.
Remote palette.
Okay. So my pick is App Switch, which is an application that gives you more control over the multitasking on your iPhone and iPod Touch.
Hmm.
So it'll show you all the processes that are running on your iPhone. And I'm using iPhone generically now to include iPod Touch. So it shows you all of the processes that are running on your iPhone. So like right now, I can see, in addition to the long list of applications that I have running, there's things like Media Remote D and SC Helper and IAPD and Notify D and all these services that run in the background.
Hmm.
And so I can see everything that's running. And then I can get some more info about each of the processes that are running, like exactly what time was it started. So like I'm looking at one process right here, and I can tell, okay, so the last time I rebooted my iPhone was about 6:15 in the evening on October 26th, because that's when the Comm Center app started running again.
Hmm.
And so then for apps that you can link into specific functions inside the app, excuse me, like in the Twitter app.
Yep.
Instead of just jumping directly to the app, I can jump directly to functions in the app. So like I can go directly into my timeline or directly into the app mentions. And so in addition to letting me jump back and forth between everything that's running, it also gives me a bunch of other types of data that are really handy. So like I can look at my system information, so I can see my MAC address, I can see what my current network address is, how much of the storage space on my iPhone I'm currently using. And it gives me a real-time uptime count. So I'm at 7 days, 16 minutes, and 58 seconds since the last time I update or launched my iPhone.
On the how granular can you get on the data storage? Does it show what kinds of space individual apps are taking up, or is it more just a universal view?
Well, I can see the total amount of data storage space being used. So like right now, 49% of my storage space is used. But I can also look at the memory and see how much is being used by apps collectively. And it'll show me page in and page outs also. It isn't breaking it down, I think, by how much how much space a specific app is using.
Right. So you can't see like how much storage Goodreader is using up for PDFs or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that.
Okay.
But it also gives me my console log.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that's really handy. Well, for people that get what the console log is for.
Well, if you want to, if an app is misbehaving, I would imagine there's some interesting information in there.
Yeah. So like I'm flipping through that right now, and there's a bunch of notice entries and some info entries, and then a bunch of debug entries. And so I'm looking at this, and I'm seeing that config.d on my iPhone is getting lots of debug errors. And that's interesting, because I didn't realize that I was having a problem like that. So now I'm going to go and start looking and see if I can figure out exactly why I'm getting all these debug errors on config.d.
Very, very interesting. And is that so the name of the app again?
The name of the app is AppSwitch, and I think it's 99 cents.
Very cool. You always have the coolest utilities.
Well, I just get lucky.
You're like king of the cool geek techie utilities. I always find good utilities through your picks. So thanks for that.
Hey, I'm there for you.
And Michael's pick is still any Hello Kitty app. So if you want to go pick up one of those, just search Hello Kitty on the App Store. And
Michael endorses all of them.
Yes. He says they're
but
all
only the official Hello Kitty apps.
Correct. Don't buy the knockoffs.
Yeah, Michael doesn't like the knockoffs at all.
All right, I think that's going to do it for We Have Communicators for this week. You can find me. I'm Adam Christensen. You'll find me normally over at the MacCast at maccast.com or on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. And if you get a chance, I'd appreciate it. You can check out the membership MacCast, which is a way to support the MacCast. I've gone full-time with podcasting, and I'm using that as my source of income. So we do extra episodes each and every week beyond the standard free ones that you get with MacCast. You'll find information on that membership program at member.maccast.com. Jeff, thanks for hanging out. You can find Jeff over at the Mac Observer, also twitter.com/jgamut, and Cafe Press and Zazzle stores, where you can get products with Jeff's original artwork on them. Most of that artwork, or is all the artwork generated during recording, Jeff, or just most of it?
You know, I'd have to go back and look. I think pretty much everything that's available was done originally as artwork during We Have Communicators.
And generated on iOS devices.
Yes. It was all done on my iPad. Now, I think there's one of the chicken images that I originally did on a notepad. But I scanned that in with my Mac and then emailed the image to my iPad so that I knew what it was supposed to look like, and then redrew it on my iPad.
Yeah. Now to get the products, you do bring it back to your Mac and vectorize it, right? Is that?
Yeah. So before everything ends up on the Zazzle or Cafe Press stores, it goes back from my iPad and then into Illustrator on my Mac, so I can vectorize it so that I don't have to worry about any sizing issues.
Yeah, resolution and stuff like that, because the different products all take different sizes. But you can find the products at cafepress.com/jgamut or zazzle.com/jgamut. And I think Michael will be back with us next week, so we'll be happy to have him back. And you can find him in the meantime over on twitter.com/lilreviews, L-I-L reviews. Where he does 140 character or less reviews of just about anything that he's interested in at any given moment in time, or anything that he is trying out. So it could be music, movies, food. You never really know, but you know, follow him over there and find out what's going on. That's going to be it for this episode. We'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.
It's like you're a pro.
Woohoo!